You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
So excited for you to join us for today's episode of West of Broadway. Just so you know, when we're discussing falsettos, we definitely get into spoiler territory. So if you haven't seen the show yet, you might want to wait until you have before you listen to the episode. Like I said, so spoilers ahead.
Coming up on this episode of West of Broadway, we are so excited to have our friend Wendy Rosoff back to break down Falsettos, which is on at the Amundsen Theater with Center Theater Group LA. And also, we get to chat with one of the stars of the next installment of the Verdi Chorus. They're blending opera and also musical theater. We're very excited to talk to Ariana Stoltz, all coming up on an action-packed episode of West of Broadway. Welcome to West of Broadway, a celebration of musical theater in Los Angeles. I'm radio host and theater enthusiast Lara Scott, along with celebrity publicist and theater veteran Will Armstrong.
Hi, Lara.
Welcome. Hi, Will. I feel like I haven't seen you in so long.
It has been too long.
I've gone to a couple of shows. I had friends who were having birthdays and friends I was connecting with, and my son wanted to see Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
But I'm so happy to see you today, and hopefully it's like we're in spring now. It's a new theater season for Will and Lara.
It sure is. And it's good to be home in the booth.
I know, it's going to be back in the booth. And we're so excited to have Wendy Rosoff back with
us.
She's been on a couple of times. And when did you see Falsettos?
I saw it this past Friday evening. I just saw it.
Okay, so I saw it last Wednesday, which was opening night
of
this recording last Wednesday. And Will has not seen the show, but we kind of did a breakdown of all the upcoming shows. And you knew a lot about the show, that it was 2 one-act plays that got combined into one. And did you ask the question, did you think that it was going to be shocking, as shocking now as it was maybe back then?
Yes, exactly. I asked that question. Thank you for recapping.
You know what? I will say, there's a quick recap if you didn't hear that episode. And, you know, let me just go right to Wendy, and we'll just jump right into this. By the way, it is on at the Amundsen Theater through May 19th. We'll give you all the ticket info and all of that at the end. But did you know about the show going into it? What was your impression? What were your thoughts on this?
So I know this show really well. I actually saw the original production on Broadway in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It was one of my first shows that I ever saw by myself. I took myself to see it, and I was really poor at the time, and I sat all the way up in the nosebleeds, and I had one of those unbelievable theater experiences where after the show, I couldn't move. I was so touched and still kind of metabolizing the show, and I just sat there and cried for a while until I got control of myself and left the theater. And then many years later, after I moved to LA, I actually did a production of Falsettos. I played Cordelia, the kosher caterer, here in LA. So I'm really connected to the show. Yeah, and I love the show.
Yay, and you loved this production of this show, too.
I did. Good. I really did love this production of it. And I actually, Will, it's interesting because I also asked the question, I wonder how an audience today will be taking in this information, because it deals with such a specific period of time and a very specific culture within that period of time. And I don't think... Well, I think there are a lot of people that don't remember that time and everything that was being dealt with. And so I thought, wow, will this land the same way? It certainly did for me. I can't speak to the rest of the audience, but I thought this was a really effective production of Falsettos. The storytelling holds up. The cast was phenomenal. The direction was great. Spencer Lift did a fantastic job with updating the choreography and giving it new life.
So for those who aren't familiar, can you give a little synopsis about what the storyline is?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, Falsettos is the combination of March of the Falsettos and Falsetto Land. And there's actually a prequel to this. It's called In Trousers.
Right.
So
it's
a trilogy. Mm-hmm. And so the first act is 1979. And it's basically following the lives of Marvin and Trina and their son, Jason. And Marvin kind of discovers that he's gay or comes out of the closet and moves in with his lover, Whizzer. And they have a therapist named Mendel, who the whole family goes to. It's incredibly dysfunctional. And then Trina and Mendel wind up falling in love. So it's kind of about this meshing of really dysfunctional and unusual family. It's about making a family, choosing how you're going to make your family.
And I love they always talked about how love can tell a million stories.
Yes.
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 I thought that was such a beautiful, beautiful theme. Message. And about how family isn't always just that family that you're born into. It's what you create.
You choose it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Loved that. So then Act Two takes place 2 years later, 1981, and Marvin and Whizzer get back together. So Marvin and Whizzer, at the end of Act One, they break up. Act Two, they get back together, and Whizzer gets sick. And this was when HIV and AIDS was first discovered, and it was just a virus that had no name, and it was just killing gay men. And nobody knew what to do, and everybody was just scared out of their wits, and it was the earliest of stages. And there's also two new characters that are introduced in Act Two. It's the lesbians from next door. So it's Cordelia, the kosher caterer, and her lover, Dr. Charlotte, who's the one who's treating Whizzer. And we kind of watch how the love of the whole family comes together to support Whizzer as he's dying. Everybody knows that he's dying, including himself. And we just watch it all go down. And it kind of the finale of it is Jason the whole time is wrestling with whether he wants to get bar mitzvahed, and Trina and Mendel and Whizzer and Marvin are trying to get him to get the bar mitzvah done. And finally, he decides he's going to do the bar mitzvah in the hospital room with Whizzer, because that's what family means. And Whizzer musters up enough strength to be at the bar mitzvah, and then he passes. And it's just, it's incredibly poignant. It's beautiful, but it is a very, very specific time. And so it's interesting. It's kind of like, did you guys see Normal Heart on HBO?
Yes.
Oh, it's wonderful. But it's also that time period of when AIDS was first starting. And, you know, young gay men of today don't know. You know, I mean, I even when I was young, in my late teens, I lost so many gay friends to AIDS. My parents' friends, I lost them. I mean, it was, you know, especially in New York City, which is where I grew up. It was quite a time.
And it was devastating to the creators of the Broadway community. We lost choreographers. We lost dancers. We lost directors.
An entire generation of creatives were lost.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and it just
was a massive loss of artists during that time, early '80s, all through really like the late '90s.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just they could not find the right cocktail to keep people alive for the longest time, and now you can be undetectable.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what's so incredible. So
it's so amazing to have this historical piece to remind people just mm-hmm. how grateful we should be because of where we are right now. You know, so it was a musical story about hope, and it continues to be even more hopeful and inspiring. And it's now about thanks as well.
Yeah. And, you know, it really takes you back to that place, that confusion, like, young men are dying and we don't know what's going on. And then Whizzer gets sick, and, you know, they talked to Marvin and said, you might get sick. And taking you back to that place of fear and uncertainty.
Yeah.
And just Nick Adams, who played Whizzer, I thought, what a
fantastic
role. Wasn't he fantastic?
Yeah.
And he comes out and he's this gorgeous,
super machismo. You know, he's like Adrian Zemed in Grease 2.
That's
what he reminded me of.
You know?
Yeah.
Just comes out and you're like, oh, you know, he's a pretty boy, whatever.
Yeah.
But he can sing, and just the emotion he brings to that role.
Oh, yeah.
Every single person. And I will tell you, Wendy, my favorite moment was Trina singing I'm Breaking Down. Eden Espinosa.
Yeah.
Killed
it's a showstopper,
she
and
so
she
good.
Was fantastic. And mm-hmm. I read a little bit about how Spencer Lift developed that number, not only with Eden, but with Stephanie J. Block, who originated the role during
the revival.
He didn't choreograph specific moves for her. They just broke it down beat by beat, acting choice by acting choice, and let her develop whatever was natural to her instincts movement-wise, to kind of tell that story. And then they started locking stuff down. And I'm assuming they did the stuff same thing with Eden. But, you know, as you can see, it was just so effective, wasn't it?
I've had moments like that, you know, where I stuffed the banana in my mouth. And I've had the mixing bowl. And I'm making dinner!
Yeah, I mean, I think we all can relate to that. For me,
it's very, very genuine.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much really effective choreography and movement in it. I thought all the performances were just breathtakingly beautiful. I really loved Dr. Charlotte, and something bad is happening when she starts wrestling around with the fact that she takes so much pride in saving people's lives. And when she starts losing control of that, you really feel the suffering in her and the fact that she's the one treating Whizzer. And then, yes, when she tells Marvin that he might die too. There were a few updates to the score and the script, even though there are very few lines. I mean, the whole thing is pretty much sung through. Mm-hmm. But the way they dealt with that moment was new, and that was gorgeous.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah, and Max Van Essen was fantastic as Marvin as well. Really great.
It's an incredible cast.
Yeah, I mean, they did a great job of casting. And again, some new ideas that I think were really so right on the money and added a whole new nuance. Mendel was quite a bit younger. Dr. Charlotte kind of brought this whole soulful. She's a strong African-American woman with a really strong point of view. And Cordelia is kind of this bubbly blonde, you know, ditzy, wonderful caterer. I mean, it really, yeah. The casting, I thought, was absolutely a home run.
And I had that experience. I wasn't there by myself, but I actually would love to see this show again by myself just to take it in. And I've just been thinking about it for the past week.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
it's a show that, like, you mm-hmm. ponder on. Yeah. I mean, it really sticks with you, and you think about certain songs and some of the unspoken or unsung moments that are so beautifully staged. They were on repeat as you're kind of working it out in your mind. And that, to me, is what makes really yummy theater.
I keep picturing the people at the Center Theater Group being like, we just sold a bunch of single tickets.
They're all going to be in Wendy's section.
Exactly. Who are the depressed clump of singles?
it is emotional. And I do think on opening night, some people had heard, oh, this is a show, you know, the revival. And they went in expecting, you know, just a big sort of light comedy, sort mm-hmm. of fun
Neil
musical.
Simon.
And
yeah.
they were a little stunned at how quickly it went very deep. And so I think you have to kind of, you know, some people just don't want to know anything before going in. But I think this one, you have to be prepared for that emotional journey.
You know,
for
it's
sure.
interesting that you say that, because I hadn't thought about it before. But when we did falsettos here, as I mentioned, I played Cordelia, so I didn't show up until Act Two. And there were always people that left during Act One.
They didn't even get to see you.
No, they didn't even get to see me.
Oh, no.
But they were like, I can't. Yeah. I can't deal with it. And not for nothing, but the time that we're living in, this is a really heavy piece of theater, and we're living in a really heavy time. So for me, I love that kind of stuff
right.
because I like to, like, I'm feeling it, I'm in it, I'm feeling it even more. But I feel like some people just want to go to the theater for sheer escapism.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No, this is like, you're going to be present. I mean, I'm breaking down. Spencer Liff was saying in his footnotes that it was 2016 when they started working on this, and they all felt like they were working through what had just happened with politics in America when they started staging I'm Breaking Down. And they were like, it was actually really cathartic for us on a multitude of levels.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not a light and fluffy piece.
Well, I feel like the Center Theater Group is doing all of these recent historical, like, therapy pieces, like Come From Away.
Yes.
Again,
oh, yeah.
It was something that we had to process. Like, it was, that was therapy for me.
Yes,
to sit
me
through
too.
That
me too. Yeah.
And it reinstilled my faith in humanity.
Yeah.
Which, again, you could see that a lot in this story as well.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. And I don't know if you guys saw Soft Power.
My
last season.
Right.
Oh, it was so good. But that's another, you know, it's historical. Well,
that was the Asian musical?
Yes. The Asian musical?
That was the Asian musical. But it was like Hillary Clinton and
yes,
all that.
Yes. And it was so funny and so well done. But really, again, like, very specific. And we were like, where is this going? Like, how is this going to do in middle America? Like, you can tell in New York, Chicago, LA, it's going to, like, kill it. But you know what I mean? But it's topical, and it's, you know, it really hits the nail on the head. But super smart theater. And you know what? Not for nothing, but I love that the Amundsen is bringing in pieces like this.
Heck yes. Yeah. We're going to be like, we're going to therapy tonight. You are? We're going to the Amundsen. Yeah. I don't know anything about with playing, but we're going to feel better when we come out of
this
there.
This is such a great piece. Depressed people and therapy. And we're working out all our yayas.
Beautifully done. Yeah, I'm going to cry.
Yeah.
But you know, just as you were talking, Wendy, I was thinking about this set design. And I think it might be the same person who did The Color Purple with how they moved that set around.
And loved this had, that.
Yeah, all these interlocking pieces.
It was kind of like, not like, Legos, but...
Like a playhouse almost.
Yeah.
Or like Lincoln Logs.
I loved how... was it at the top of Act Two when they built those arches and then they all started tilting?
Yeah, that's one of the publicity shots that they have out there. It's like kind of that iconic shot.
And it's really so well done.
And I might be reading too much into this. Sometimes I'm like, did they mean this or am I just... But kind of like the interlocking pieces of this family that they have created. All these pieces got taken apart.
Oh, I don't think you're reading
rearranged.
Into it at all. I think that's exactly what it's meant to be.
Yay,
and
I got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
Lara, I'm so proud that you've gone from a theater enthusiast to a theater expert on your like just okay. hear you.
Well, I'm not expert yet. Well, I'm a major fan. I've learned a few things.
But
from
you're
you, Will,
actually
Anthony
that's
Wendy.
that's a theatrical kind of. It's not a trope, but you're seeing a tool that was used. That's a tool of storytelling by a conversation between the set designer and a director. And you saw that. So that's, you're fancy.
Goodbye radio.
Hello, theater. Hello, Broadway.
No, just, you know, the whole creative team on this. Mm-hmm. James Lapine, William Fed. And I loved it, too, that it was mainly sung.
Yes.
I didn't even realize that really until the end of the first act. I'm like, I think there have been like seven words that were spoken. But it's just so beautiful how it goes from one thing to the next. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not just a super smooth transition, but you can follow along very quickly. But you have to pay attention. And
yeah, you got to be on it.
Yeah.
You can't really like sit back and let it come at you. You really have to be with it.
Yeah. I hope everybody goes and sees
Me
this
too.
Show. And Wendy, thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Sharing that with us.
Thanks, you guys.
I was kind of nervous because I loved it so much. And I was like, I wonder what Wendy thought. But
no,
I'm glad.
I loved it. I loved it.
I'll have to turn the mic off if she hates it. No, I'm kidding. So tickets for Falsettos are available by calling 213-972-4400 online at centertheatergroup.org. And that center, T-H-E-A-T-R-E group.org. Or you can visit the Center Theater Group box office located at the Amundsen Theater. And again, Falsettos is on through May 19th. And coming up on May 4th, it's another round with the Verdi Chorus, and we're going to talk to one of the singers from that show. Let's welcome to West of Broadway, Ariana Stultz.
Yay!
Hi!
Hi! All right, so the 36th season of the Verdi Chorus presents the Walter Fox Singers in Love is Timeless. Starring you, it's an evening of best-loved arias, duets, ensembles, and songs from opera and musical theater. And this is exciting because we have talked to different folks performing with the chorus over the past year, really, and Anne-Marie Ketchum, the director. but I think this is the first time that musical theater has been included in this. So can you tell us a little bit about the show that's coming up on May 4th?
Yeah, so it's, you know, a really incredible group of some of the section leaders that lead this chorus. It's a group of about 60 people, and we're the section leaders, so we're doing this solo concert. And yeah, the first half is going to be opera, arias, and duets, just like you said. And then, yeah, it's the first time we're incorporating musicals that are right around the 20th century. And actually, funny enough, this is my first time performing in any musical ever. really, really exciting because I totally am from like a classically trained background, have 2 degrees in like opera, you know, from USC and from Bard College in New York. And so I have just been on this really, you know, strict diet, you could say, of just like operatic singing. And so I've been plunging into the world of, you know, musicals and Broadway songs and things like that. And it has been so, so exciting. The piece that I'm actually doing is with, were you going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, what would you say is the biggest thing, like the biggest surprise transitioning from opera to musical theater?
Oh, man. I would say one of the biggest things is the affect that mm-hmm. you can use in a lot of musical theater that can really, really take it to the next level in a lot of ways that with opera, you know, of course there are moments you can have aspirate and, you know, go a little off the voice and things like that. If you are suggesting a sigh or, you know, if something crazy just happened, you know, but a lot of the times you want to really very strictly stay on technique, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And one of the really cool things that I've just been finding as I've been studying this character, I'm going to be in a duet from Guys and Dolls. We're doing Marry the Man today. Is that you get to have all of these moments that are just like idiosyncratic, you know, interjections, and like it doesn't always necessarily have to be the note that's written on there. And beyond that, though, just the vocalization is in some ways, of course, much more talkative, which has been very, very cool. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, of course, there's recit in opera, but it's really two different animals. And so I've been having so much fun finding the very human quality that connects musical theater to an audience in a way that I think is unique to musical theater.
And I'm excited for this show because opera fans will get a taste of musical theater, and then the musical theater people that are there for that are going to get an introduction to opera, maybe.
Sure.
You know, this might be their first time experiencing that. How did you come to get involved with the Verdi Chorus? Verdi Chorus.
Yeah, I was in school. I was in grad school at USC, and I had a couple friends who were part of it. And, you know, we have lots of operas that we're doing all the time when I was at school, and our schedules were so strict, but he was like, if you can find some time, it meets on Mondays, it's from 6 to 9, or, you know, 6:45 to 9:45, and it's just a good time. And I was like, well, what do you mean? You know, I'm constantly in shows, and, like, there's, you know, so many tight deadlines, like, is it going to be something like that? And he was like, no, this is like a community of people that just genuinely loves each other. And you have to come to truly experience it. And so I auditioned, was thankful or lucky enough to get in and get this scholarship position as a Walter Fox singer. And every single year I've come back because it's one of the most loving group of hilarious, sensitive, just good people that I've been around. I think, you know, the opera world can sometimes be pretty competitive, you know, and you kind of get lost in some of the competitions and, you know, the rejections and feeling isolated. And I think being in this chorus for opera brings it just like perfect, I don't know, this perfect combination of just like singing together and singing the kind of music that you love, but because it's all chorus work, you know, you're always singing next to your best friends. It's an incredible experience.
That sounds really fun. So you get to hang out with your friends. You get to do what you
exactly.
love. And Ariana, I saw that you actually started your own choir program. You co-founded a program?
Oh my goodness, is that what they told you?
If you didn't, just take the credit. Say thank you. Yes, I did.
So when I was in undergrad, I went to a close friend of mine, and we started an alumni choir that was called Holes' Angels because it was based off of our high school director named Jeff Holes, who is actually somebody I work with today. I am a teacher at Santa Monica High School. And so it was just a group of really good friends. We would come to my house and just sing every Saturday, and we did a concert. And we had a second summer, but, you know, everybody's lives got really busy. I, you know, was applying to schools and going to summer programs. And so, unfortunately, we weren't able to keep it going, but it was a really wonderful two summers. I think it was like the summer of 2013 or 2014 or something like that.
Well, how lucky are the kids at Santa Monica High School that they get to learn from you and you're out there working and, you know, it's wonderful to teach, but it's great that they can actually come and see you perform. And what I love, too, about this show is tickets start at, I believe, $10. Yep. They range up to $40. So, I mean, you know, you get to see world-class opera singers for starting at $10, which is pretty amazing. And Will, you have all the ticket info over there.
Yeah, I do. And it's just, it's such an amazing testament to what Anne-Marie Ketchum has created, mm-hmm. that these one, every time we talk to someone from the Verdi Chorus, we can tell how much they love and appreciate what they do and who they do it with. And that just speaks volumes to the kind of shows that they can create. The Verdi Chorus is performing at, for one night only, Love is Timeless at the First United Methodist Church in Santa Monica on Saturday, May 4th at 7:30 p.m. And tickets are available at verdichorus.org.
Awesome. And Ariana, where can we keep up with you online?
I have a website. It's arianachristinestolz.com. Unfortunately, it doesn't have the dates of my shows. But I have a Facebook. I post all the time about different shows that I'm a part of and things like that. But you're reminding me that I should definitely, you know, be a little more attentive to my website. I think a lot of singers, you know, fall behind a little bit in telling everybody about their shows and what's coming up.
Too busy performing to stop and
creating.
Remind people. So, yeah, it's understandable.
Exactly. You know, you teach every day. I teach at, you know, like four different schools. And then, you know, I'm part of these wonderful choirs like Verdi Chorus. And you barely have a time to breathe, but you feel like the luckiest person in the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for what you do and what you do to help educate the next generation of performers, because that's just as important.
Yeah, we hope everybody goes to see you on May 4th. And thank you so much for your time, Ariana.
Thank you, Ariana. Yay.
Thank you both so much.
Bye. Have a wonderful afternoon. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye. Do you want to join the Verdi Chorus?
I was just
going
to say, I feel like we're kind of just like, they're going to just let us be members.
I know. And every time they do a show, I end up having a work event. I think I'm hosting actually another show that night. But if not, I would absolutely be there, because I feel like just the feeling in the church is going to be amazing, in addition to this wonderful mix of opera and theater. It's like peanut butter and jelly, right? Like, it goes together really well. And maybe people will start to do more of that. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Ariana. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of West of Broadway. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Lara Scott Media.
And I'm Will Armstrong, PR, across all platforms.
She should hire you. Work on the website.
Hey, yeah.
Get yourself out there. I should have mentioned that.
She needs to fire whatever team she's using right
now. That's right. Ariana, when you're listening to this later, Will Armstrong, PR. And if you're looking for us, you can find us just west of Broadway. Literally Broadway in Santa Monica. Although I think, is the church east of Broadway in Santa Monica?
No.
It's around Broadway.
I use my GPS in my car. I get lost without it.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.